Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, March 17, 2022. The World Food Programme says some families in South Sudan will face looming food crisis.
We're witnessing the worst hunger crisis to date in South Sudan.
And some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, say the media is helping them to get credible information about issues in their country.
I listen to political programs and I have liked to have a radio since I was a young boy in school. I used to listen to the radio because when a piece of information is being circulated in the neighborhood and not coming from radio, I don't consider it because the radio has not covered them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some media houses in South Sudan say their efforts to provide information to the public across the country are constantly hampered by lack of access to information at some government institutions. A program manager of a Juba-based radio station says media houses focus on the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement and security-related issues. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Sexuality education.
55-year-old South Sudanese Panchol Yuana scans channels on his radio for programs that best suits him. Like many other South Sudanese, he especially relies on radio to receive credible news and information rather than listening to rumors or reading misinformation posted on social media.
I listen to political programs and I have liked to have a radio since I was a young boy in school. I used to listen to the radio because when a piece of information is being circulated in the neighborhood and not coming from radio, I don't consider it because the radio has not covered them. So I don't consider them.
Yuana says news regarding the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan is among the topics he constantly follows on the radio. Other times, Yuana says he listens to the radio to help relieve his stress.
When I don't listen to the radio, I don't feel happy mentally. But when the radio is beside me, I focus on the program and that cleanses my mind. I constantly listen to it until I forget the stress that was in my mind.
Jacob Alier, another radio listener in Bor, says he sometimes experiences an information gap on vital national issues when listening to different radio stations in South Sudan.
We are missing a lot of things. Let me start with the revitalized peace agreement. And a lot of the citizens in Jonglei said here, people are not aware. There are some provisional within the revitalized peace agreement. And even people are not aware, there will be election or not. We are not aware about that. And if the media are allowed to play their role, they can give us a lot of information.
Some media houses in Juba say they have exerted significant effort to serve their listeners and followers on the internet with credible information. Kong Pal, program manager at the Juba-based iRadio, says despite those efforts, his station tends to focus on several items that he thinks listeners in Juba are interested in. Pal, who also serves as the chairman of the Editors Forum in Juba, says access to information is a constant problem facing journalists who are trying to dig deeper into certain stories of public interest.
We are not getting enough information about the reforms, for example. What is happening when it comes to the reform? Because it is one of the, in one of the chapter of peace agreement, it talked about reform. Reform in financial sector, in economic sector, in governance. This thing, nobody's talking about it. And when you try to ask, nobody wants to give you information.
Aside from radio stations, some South Sudanese rely on newspapers for information. Japas Ogila, editor-in-chief of the City Review, a local independent daily newspaper operating in Juba, says his publication covers a wide array of stories in order to better serve their readership.
We want to serve all the demographics of readership, be they
adults, be they young people, be they women or men. We realize that most readers in South Sudan buy papers, especially when our headline talks about things to do with security, things to do with humanitarian issues like, let's say, hunger or flood.
Moyiga Nduru, Commissioner of the South Sudan Access to Information Commission, denies the government is withholding information from journalists.
The access to information deal with something that is published in the government record or in the private sector record. If you have problem accessing it, then you can come to us. We deal with records. If they don't want, and then you come and you complain. Fill a form and then we write to the government officials.
Association for Media Development in South Sudan says 46 independent radio stations and 6 newspapers, including 2 Arabic dailies, are currently operating in South Sudan. Some of the newspapers and radio stations have been closed over the past few years and have not reopened. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still on media issues, the Malian government says it will suspend broadcasts of Radio France International and France 24 television in the country. The announcement followed reports by the French media and a rights group that the Malian army has committed human rights abuses in recent months. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako.
Mali's military government issued a statement Thursday that it will initiate proceedings to suspend until further notice RFI and France 24 broadcasts in Mali. The move came after RFI and Human Rights Watch reported on human rights abuse allegations against Mali's army. The government said that the allegations are false and are part of a strategy aimed at destabilizing the transition, demoralizing the Malian people, and discrediting the valiant armed forces. Human Rights Watch published a report on Tuesday that included alleged witness accounts of executions and other abuses committed by Malian soldiers and, separately, by Islamist extremists. The report also includes interviews with those who visited the site of a mass grave near Diabali, Mali. The grave contained the bodies of several victims who were burned with their hands tied behind their backs, videos of which have been circulating on social media in recent weeks. Locals have accused the army of committing the executions and say the victims are ethnic Fulani men who were unfairly targeted. Mali's army denied claims that they were responsible for executions that occurred near Diabali. Mali's military government, which took power in a 2021 coup, in February suspended the accreditation process for foreign journalists. Regarding the threatened suspensions, France Media Monde, the parent company of RFI and France 24, issued a press release Thursday stating that it will investigate all avenues of appeal to ensure that such a decision is not implemented. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
World Food Program officials in South Sudan say the country will witness the worst hunger crisis this year. Some families in Jonglei State say they are struggling to put food on the table after last year's floods destroyed their farms. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
The World Food Program warned last week that more than 70% of the population in South Sudan will struggle to survive the heights of this year's lean season as the country copes with unprecedented levels of food insecurity caused by conflict, climate shocks, COVID-19 and rising costs. WFP's communications officer in South Sudan, Marwa Awad, says an estimated 8.3 million people in South Sudan, including refugees, will face extreme hunger in the coming month.
We're witnessing the worst hunger crisis to date in South Sudan. Over 8 million people are extremely hungry, and this includes tens of thousands of people who could starve if we're unable to reach them with food assistance. We're seeing people's resilience fading in the face of the ongoing conflict, the floods, and rising food prices. We have solutions. We have the programs that can help to build people's resilience and to restore their livelihoods. But we need the funding to scale up and reach more people.
Awad says how Sudan forms part of what Awad calls a ring of fire, encircling the globe where climate shocks, conflict, the pandemic, and rising costs are driving millions closer to starvation. 45-year-old Kenny Magongmoth says last year's unprecedented flash floods in Bor and other parts of the country destroyed farms, while insecurity caused by intercommunal conflicts hinder people like herself from accessing cultivated fields. The mother of 6 girls says she is struggling to feed her family.
The feeding of the children has really stressed me up. This is the reason why I kept moving to cultivate the vegetables. The UN provided food. You cannot depend on it only now because it has been cut. When rations were enough, I was able to do other things to generate money so that the children go to school. But now it is only two of my children who are in school. My husband is a soldier and he is in a Kobo now. His salary cannot support us. He gets 3,000 SSP, which cannot provide meals for 2 days.
Moth says she largely depends on food rations provided by the UN World Food Program, but the WFP cut those rations 6 months ago. Moth says she resorted to cultivating a small vegetable garden along the river to generate a small amount of income to feed her children.
Another problem now is the hiking of prices at the market. 2 weeks ago, 2 liters of oil was 4,000 SSP, but now it is cost 5,000 SSP. A sack of sugar used to be 15,000 SSP, but it is now 20,000 SSP. This increase is too much. Someone like me cannot afford such prices.
60-year-old Abol Malwal says she is unable to farm because of her age and illness. She says the food ration she receives from the WFP is too small to support her. Malwal says she fears she will starve when the current situation continues.
The food ratio we are getting currently are very small and cannot sustain us for long. There is nothing else but the elderly people such as me, who has no children to support them, are likely to starve. So I appeal to the UN to listen to our voices and increase the rations so that we survive.
Last year, the United Nations World Food Program announced it would suspend food assistance for more than 100,000 displaced people in parts of South Sudan as part of what it called a prioritization exercise driven by funding shortages. In a press release issued last week, Adeyinka Badejo, Deputy Country Director of the World Food Program in South Sudan, said the impact of the climate crisis and ongoing conflict have led to large-scale displacement, livelihoods losses, the destruction of arable land and crops, as well as rising food prices, threatening the survival of communities living in some of the most isolated areas in Jonglei, Lakes, Unity, and Warafi states. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, university lecturers in Rumbek go on strike. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who comes first in your life?
My sister comes first because she was the one who raised me. She taught me how to do everything, so she comes first.
Definitely God, but I think when talking about people, I think my family and my friends, just people who I've, you know, surrounded myself with.
I think the woman that I love. Every moment I think about her, every moment I wish I'm around her, because she makes me happy. She gives me a lot of peace. She has a way of helping me to just relax and calm down.
My mom comes first in my life because she has really done a whole lot for me, and if there's anything, I would really want to do something to honor her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Lecturers and support staff at Rumbek University of Science and Technology have joined two other public universities by going on strike to demand their 6 months' salary arrears. Students at the university say this strike will affect their studies. William Sande Mabor reports for VOA from Rumbek.
Lecturers and other employees at Rumbek University of Science and Technology held a peaceful protest on campus Wednesday as they announced they were joining the strike started last week by colleagues at the University of Juba, another university, and the days later at the University of Western Barlagazal. The university administrators and lecturers turned up on campus but did not teach or attend to office duties. The lecturers say they are waiting to hear positive news from the authorities in Juba for them to start teaching again. Matthew Malaumarich, chairperson of Rumbek University of Science and Technology Academic Staff Association, says the lecturers won't return to class until the government pays their 6 months' salary arrears.
Universities are patriotic. They are the people who love South Sudan. And for such a love, that's why we begin to console when we have never been hearing any positive response from the government. Based on that patriotism, we don't want to say that the strike will end, but we also say that it will not end, but we have the heart of patriotism for building this nation. Okay. If any changes happen in the course of weekend, probably we will have a positive start of the next week. We think we shall come back to resume our normal duties if things change.
University lecturer Kalmanton Marial says he and his colleagues will only return to work when the government pays their arrears.
As university staffs, is that we have met and we resolve that we sit down until our salary arrears, par back 2020, up to 2022, are paid. Failure to be paid, therefore we still have to stay down until the government met our demand. We thank everyone who stand firm with us, because we need our rights from the government. After we have been paid, we'll deliver our service as usual.
Some students say they are disappointed. The strike means they will not be attending lectures, but they don't blame university staff for the standoff. Student Albino Kirinyot is calling on the government to quickly pay the lecturers' salaries in arrears so that the lecturers and students can return to the classroom.
We are not happy as a student of what had happened to our university about the closure of the university. It is not the problem of lecturers or teaching assistant or the entire administration. It is the problem to the government that they have not been responding to the payment of our administrators, because without services delivered to the university will not operate. We have been deprived from our right of studies. From that day, the university closed down.
Student Angelina Dilmalwal is also urging the government to pay the lecturers their payback.
Let the government address this to at least capture their attention, because even 2 days, you cannot spend 2 days while your children lack something and you are the head of that family. So you will not even give the quality education, give the quality services. If government of South Sudan could at least address this as soon as possible. We have been having some bad debt already. 2020 was the issue of corona, and again we were having the issue of feeding program, which has taken us almost 18 months without attending to our classes. Now again it has become the issue of this strike, teaching academic staff. They need to be paid on time.
South Sudan Deputy Finance Minister Agok Makur told South Sudan in Focus this week his ministry is working to pay 4 months' salary arrears to all civil servants, including university lecturers. Makur admits the ministry has struggled to pay civil servants' salaries since 2013. He blames the delay on the civil war, inflation, and the poor collection of non-oil revenue. South Sudan depends almost entirely on oil revenues for covering its budget expenses, including the payment of civil servant salaries. Makur says increasing oil production and streamlining the collection of non-oil revenues are some of the strategies the government is using to fix persistent delays in paying civil servant salaries. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor in Rumbek, Lagos State.
Media reports say 13 miners were killed in Sudan's South Kordofan on Tuesday. Reuters quotes a Sudanese official as saying the gold mine in the area was not up to standards. Reuters news agency says 80% of Sudan's gold is mined using crude methods. Ahead of the World Tuberculosis Day, which is March 24th, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria is calling on governments to renew their fight against the respiratory illnesses, which kills over 1 million people each year. In South Africa, a hotspot for TB, mobile screening team is trying to make up for disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
Despite being treatable and preventable, tuberculosis is a leading killer in South Africa. Testing for TB treatment has dropped dramatically during the coronavirus pandemic, with deadly consequences. Latoya Weiser's 32-year-old partner is among the fatalities.
His tongue, he was only saying that he's feeling bad. He didn't even taste the food. It's whereby I asked him, let's go to the clinic and test. It's whereby we find out that he's positive.
Although Weiser's partner was in treatment for 2 months, he succumbed to TB last August. Testing did ensure their infant son was put on preventative treatment. Both Weiser and the baby remain healthy, but she struggles with her loss.
I did wish, because if maybe we did find out sooner, maybe he would have still been alive.
Her experience is not unique. An estimated 1.8 billion people globally are infected with TB bacteria, disproportionately affecting those in poorer nations. Of those infected, roughly 10 million people get sick every year. The Global Fund says development of new TB treatments has long stagnated, and the onset of the coronavirus has made matters worse. Mohamed Yassin is a senior disease advisor on TB for the Global Fund.
We have seen more than 20% drop in the number of people who access diagnosis and treatment, and then the transmission will continue, and that will contribute to overall TB incidence and mortality. TB mortality for the first time increased to 1.5 million from the 1.4 million in 2019.
A new mobile clinic supported by the Global Fund aims to close the gap in TB testing. It's reaching people like Weiser, who find it hard to get to clinics. Ashley Mbakota is a radiographer for the van-based clinic.
If you don't know, like, surely you can't take care, you can't protect people next to you from something that you don't know that you have, even if you're not showing any symptoms. So we just check them. After screening, what we normally do, if we pick up that they have TB, we make sure that we trace the TB, like in families, friends, they all come and test.
Governments are also learning from mistakes made during the coronavirus pandemic to improve treatment for illnesses that were neglected. Dr. Ben Montwedi is a district clinical manager for HIV and TB programs in South Africa.
In hindsight, we should have, when we're investigating for COVID, also investigated for TB. But we have realized that we're rectifying our mistakes. We are rechanneling our efforts now to integrate COVID activities with primary health care activities, including TB services now.
To ensure efforts like this can have the greatest impact, the Global Fund is appealing to the international community for $18 billion. It says the funding will correct setbacks caused by the pandemic and move the world closer to eliminating diseases like tuberculosis. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Most women in Africa work on farms, but few have legal rights to the land they farm, including Kenyan women, despite laws meant to guarantee their rights. Implementation of the laws remain a challenge, and African women's land rights groups are hoping to change. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's real estate market has been booming for a decade, with more commercial and residential projects going up in urban centers. Despite the boom, women still face a myriad of challenges to become property owners and builders. Robin Emerson is the president of Women in Real Estate, a networking organization in Kenya.
I've sat in on some international development meetings where even just 2 weeks ago, where people that are international donors and international funders talking about affordable housing, and everyone at that table were men. Who's at the table talking about where $8 billion are going to go are all men. Now that's unacceptable.
Despite the challenges, more women are venturing into real estate development and finding success. Leah Wamboi, a successful real estate developer in Nairobi, quit her beverage selling business to become a real estate developer. At some point, she doubted her move and thought of quitting, she recalls with a smile. Today, she has built over 200 homes in the Nairobi metropolitan area, though she and other women face many challenges in the male-dominated business.
So, you work with a contractor who feels that they should not expect to hear things from a woman, or there is a particular way that we've been doing things and this is how we do things. They think that you probably don't know because you're a woman.
Having built one of the leading construction materials manufacturing companies in Kenya over the past two decades, architect Winnie Ngumi understands too well the obstacles women face.
Even today when I represent the company, say we are seeking a financial facility, we are trying to get a loan, I do face bias. It is almost as if I should have a man with me in the room when I'm negotiating for credit lines for the business.
Women in Real Estate, or WIRE, is working to help. Here again is the organization's president, Emerson.
We have a mentorship program that we take professionals to walk with them over that journey and to just assure them, to be there to answer any questions that they might have, even addressing sexual harassment issues that they experience, and to help them to be confident that they can speak out about these issues and that that space is for their, is theirs also.
Industry experts say it will take time to come out of deeply rooted cultural and traditional beliefs in Kenya and across Africa that make it harder for women to thrive in many sectors. But advocates believe because of women like Robin Emerson, Leah Wamboi, and Winnie Ngumi, gradual change is possible. Juma Majanga for VA News, Nairobi.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Emerson with his song Tutu Party.
I dey watch like a bottom step and die. I see short skirts, hey, a mini skirt. Oh, who's one for dance with when this party goes start? I want ballet, yeah. I want ballet.
What you want?
Makale, and the party back me alle.
Overload.
Not to your business, but in a party you come. Let me make an overload if you ask you gonna do. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah.
We have been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Before you even start the party, check for G-string or bikini. Now that's man, they're ready, oh no. Can't see tutu, so jamma, so we na the party. But see, well, in the can it get already. With
my boss Lokoti, Baba Duri waiting to say, tell me if you really done ready. Yeah, 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 yeah. They dance, they swing and they bounce it. No say, and they dance to the party. You see me, they jump, they swing, cool.